tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeVellier. In this hour, horror. Later on, The Sealed Book from 1945, but first a broadcast of The Inner Sanctum, a CBS episode from August 29th, 1949, called Death's Little Brother.
Good evening, friends. This is your host to welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum. Come in. We would like at this point to deny certain rumors that have been spread around to the effect that we of the inner sanctum lack culture. Why, we have our own shelf of the world's great classics. In our case, a 6-foot shelf, naturally. We subscribe regularly to such magazines as the Saturday Evening Ghost. We're all members of the Spook of the Month Club. There's nothing we like more than curling up in a fire with a copy of Shakespeare's immortal Midsummer Night's Scream. In short, we are people definitely interested in the spirits. And I can safely say that all of us here have received their degree. Usually the third.
Tonight's Inner Sanctum Mystery, Death's Little Brother, was written by Lou Vittus and stars Larry Haynes in the role of Danny with Amsie Strickland as Susie.
Very well. Lock the windows, bolt the door, pull the shade down, pay the premium on your life insurance, and listen to Death's Little Brother. A happy-minded opus devoted to the thesis that nobody lives forever, and most people even less. Meet Danny, a lad on a train, his ticket paid on his way to... Suppose you find out.
The big idea about trains is that they go someplace. Someplace where people want to get to. I wasn't going anyplace. I was only getting out of town. The cops wanted to talk to me about a coffee pot that got itself held up. After the conversation, I would have wound up in front of a jury, and the judge would have made a speech about crime, and I'd have spent a year or maybe two in state prison. So I got on a train. Any train. I wasn't particular. But the rest of the people, they picked this train. It was going to places they knew about. Places they wanted to be. I looked at them and hated every one of them, including the guy who flopped into the seat next to mine. He was around my age, around my size. To somebody in a hurry, he could have been my brother.
Quite a train, huh?
Quite a train.
Say, would you know how long it'll be before we get to Dorchester?
No, I wouldn't know.
That's where I'm headed for.
I guess that.
Yeah. You think they got a smoker on this train?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think I'll go find it. Second train I've been on tonight.
A guy who was overdoing it. Not only one train, two trains. A guy who was very anxious to get someplace. So anxious, he hadn't noticed his wallet dropping out of his pocket. I had. A couple of tens, a handful of ones. Went into my pocket fast. Driver's license, which said the guy's name was Clark Davis. Odds and ends of junk. A letter. A letter which smelled of perfume, nice perfume. I read it. Clark Davis had a sister named Susie. She wrote the letter. The mother and father had died 20 years ago in a car crash. An uncle named Davis had brought up the guy. The girl had gone to another uncle named Carter. Out in Africa, Uncle Carter had died and left his dough, lots of it, to his niece Susie and to his nephew Clark. Clark and Susie hadn't seen each other for 20 years. I put the dough back into the wallet. Susie was in the old family shack in Dorchester. That was where Clark was going. That was where I was going.
Say, did you happen to notice...
this?
Yeah, my wallet.
You dropped it.
Thanks. For a while, I was afraid it was gone.
It's come back.
Thanks again.
He went to sleep sitting in the seat next to me. I didn't go to sleep. Susie and Clark hadn't seen each other for 20 years. I wasn't going anyplace in particular. Dorchester might be just as good a place to get off at as any. Maybe even better.
You got off here too, huh?
Yeah, it looks that way, don't it?
Not a dump. Station's dark, not a cab in sight.
Wasn't anybody supposed to meet you?
I didn't tell her what train I was coming on.
Her?
My sister.
Oh. Live in town?
Nope. I'm out on Lakeshore Drive, wherever that is.
I know where it is. You wait here.
Huh?
I'm heading out that direction myself. Maybe I can rustle up a car.
Hey, thanks. That's swell of you.
Forget it. It's on my way. I'd spotted a sign down the street. A cheap hotel battling the termites. I went in. Hey.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
Where's Lakeshore Drive?
Oh, a couple of miles out, east on the highway. Can't miss the turnoff.
I need a car to get there, don't I?
Yep.
Got one you can let me have?
Old station wagon, but you didn't mention your name.
Oh, I didn't, did I? It's Clark Davis.
Susan Carter's brother?
Yeah.
Well, we've been hearing a lot about you and Tom.
How about that station wagon?
Why, sure, seeing as who you are. Won't have any need of it tonight. Here you are. Glad to be of service. Runs fine, only you got to be careful of the brake.
Don't worry, I'll be careful. So long. The station wagon was there, and so was Clark.
Came along after you.
Yeah, that station wagon. Hop in.
Okay.
I was pretty sure nobody had seen Clark get into the car. And pretty sure it would have to be good enough. Turnoff in 10 minutes, and I began pumping the hand choke. Clark had his eyes closed.
What? Hey, what happened?
Motor. I'll, have to take a look at it. Know much about cars?
Oh, not a thing.
Might be trouble. Now, let's see what's under the hood. Oh, yeah, yeah. Carburetor's flooded.
Is that bad?
Not serious. Take a while to drain off. In the meantime, there's a lake over there. Like to take a look at it?
Yeah, sure. The bank's kind of steep.
Oh, there's no hurry.
The water looks good.
I'm 3/4 asleep.
Now, why don't you get some water on your face? Might wake you up.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. Boy, it's cold.
Cold and deep. Davis.
Huh?
How's your sister going to know it's you when you show up?
I'll tell her.
Didn't you send her any pictures of yourself?
No, I haven't got any pictures. Come on down here. The water's fine.
Yeah, sure.
Say, it just occurred to me. How come you know about Susie and me?
Hotel clerk, town gossip.
Oh. Better be careful with rocks.
I'll be careful. And I was. There were lots of rocks around. I didn't grab just any rock. I picked one that was heavy enough, but not too heavy to handle easy. And I went down.
I certainly feel a lot better. Hey, what do you got that rock for?
The rock?
You weren't thinking of trying to skip that across the water, were you?
Skip it?
What you need is a flat rock. I want a whole lot smaller.
What I need is this rock. He went down, sprawling over the rocks at the edge of the lake. He wasn't dead, but after a while... he was dead. I went through his pockets. While that identification letter from Susan Carter, the works... it went into my pockets. It wasn't robbery, though. I gave him my wallet. And I gave him some rocks, too. Loaded his pockets with them. So when I dumped him in the lake, he went down. He'd stay down, too, for a while. And if he came up in a week or two, he'd be a guy called Danny, wanted by the cops for larceny. and he wouldn't have much of a face left to identify. I turned around and headed back for the car. Now I was somebody who had some place to go to.
Yes?
Hello, Susie.
Hello. Oh, you must
be... Haven't you got a kiss for your big brother?
Clark. Oh.
I didn't wire. I thought I'd surprise you.
Oh, it's a wonderful surprise, Clark. Oh, I'm so glad you came. I was lonely.
Lonely? Well, this is your home.
I'd never lived in it. Uncle and I were abroad all these years. Oh, but of course you know that.
Yeah, sure. Your letter. See?
It's funny after such a long time. But you know, Clark, I think I'm going to like my brother. He's kind of handsome.
Well, I guess it runs in the family.
Thank you, darling.
I'm kind of tired.
Oh, of course you are. Come on. I'll show you a room. I sort of expected Mrs. Brenner to be with you, though.
Mrs. Brenner?
I bet she's a wonderful person.
Mrs. Brenner.
Clark, what's the matter with you? I'm talking about the housekeeper. The one who practically brought you up. You wrote me about her, don't you remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure, I remember. I'm just foggy. I haven't had much sleep.
I know. Well, like your room?
Yeah, it's swell.
I've got Mrs. Brenner's room ready for her down the hall.
Susie.
Yes?
Susie, she didn't come with me because she wasn't feeling too good. Matter of fact, I don't know when she'll get here.
You're worried about her. That's sweet, Clark, but you don't really have to.
Huh?
I got a phone call from her, about half an hour before you came.
You did?
Uh-huh. She said she'll be here first thing in the morning. Good night, Clark.
With Mrs. Brenner due in the morning... Mrs. Brenner, who knew Clark Davis, I had things to think about. One of them was finding out when the train came in. I found out. It was coming in early the next morning, which meant I had to be early, too, very early.
Clark?
Huh? Oh, Susie.
Good morning, darling. But why are you up so early?
Oh, what about you?
I always get up early. Don't forget, I'm taking care of the house.
Well, I've got to get the station wagon back to the hotel.
They don't need it, not right away.
And besides, Mrs. Brenner's coming in.
Oh.
I want to meet her at the train.
Well, she could always get a cab.
Yeah, but, I'd like to make sure she gets here. I'd like to make sure. But she didn't come in. Not on that train.
Hi, Mr. Davis.
Huh? Oh, the clerk.
Yep. Seen somebody off?
No.
Expecting somebody?
No.
Well, it's fun watching trains.
I brought the hotel station wagon.
Oh, well, it was no great hurry. A cigarette, Mr. Davis?
I don't smoke.
Ain't much of a habit. I guess the other fella left this packed in the station wagon then.
Other fella?
One that you was with last night.
I was alone.
Looked kind of sick. Guess he's staying out at the house with you.
No, I tell you, I was alone.
Thought you might have some trouble starting the wagon. You was so nervous.
Well, I was tired, that's all.
So I kind of drifted over to the window in front of the hotel. Seen you help him in.
I told you I was alone.
That's right. I guess the pack of cigarettes could have been left in the car before last night.
Sure.
Even though I cleaned it out thorough before you took it. And I guess... Maybe I could have made a mistake about seeing another fella get in with you. Mr. Davis.
Sure.
I need a little time to think about these mistakes. Get my mind straight about them. Can't do that if I have to keep on working.
I don't get it.
Well, I could use a vacation.
And take one.
I can't afford it. Less than a rich young fella like you feels like helping out.
Well, I haven't.
The whole town knows about the legacy, Mr. Davis. Now, I ain't the fancy kind. Say, a couple of $1,000, hmm?
A couple of thousand. You're crazy.
No. Just need a vacation awful bad. Say, tonight?
Tonight?
Yep.
All right. Where can I meet you?
Oh, I'll stop by the house.
No, no. My sister.
Well, outside the house, then.
Okay. Down near the road. By the lake.
Sounds all right.
Around 8?
You better wait inside the house till you hear a hoot owl go 3 times. I do awful good hoot owl. Ain't any real ones around, so you'll know it's me.
Yeah, but...
I don't want you waiting outside for me in the dark. Might catch cold. So long, Mr. Davis. See you tonight. And besides doing a good hoot owl, I'm pretty good at shooting things. Comes from hunting. You don't want to forget that, do you?
Clark?
Yeah?
You're so fidgety.
Well, I'm kind of worried.
About Mrs. Brenner? She'll probably show up tomorrow.
No, no, not about her. Susie, I've got some debts to take care of.
Oh?
I guess the legacy is all set, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
I'd like to lay my hands on some of it. Just for the fun of it.
Well, it'll take only about a week before it comes through, Clark.
A week?
You know, all the legal red tape and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, but a week can be an awful long time. Susie, you wouldn't have any money.
Of course I have.
Well, how much can you let me have? Against my share, of course.
$200, $300?
That's all?
Clark, are you in trouble?
No, of course not. Only, well, do you think the lawyer in charge of the estate might advance some dough?
I don't think so.
Why not?
Well, most of Uncle's money is tied up abroad.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, well, that settles that.
Settles what?
I'll just have to wait, Susie. That's all. I might have paid the clerk off if I had the money. Might have. But this way it was going to be cheaper and safer. He was waiting for me down by the lake. And he had a gun. He told me that. I'd have to come to him facing him, he thought. But if I got the lake, I'd had all day to find a boat. I found one. There was no moon, so it was dark. There was a wind which made noise. More than noise enough to cover the sound of the boat, even if he'd been listening for it, and he wasn't. He was wearing a white shirt, which made it easy. He was standing a couple of feet from the shore, facing towards the house. I let the boat drift the last few yards, quietly. Besides, I needed an oar for another purpose. It was a heavy oar. I was out of the boat and hit the shallow water. There was a splash, but it didn't register on him until I was close.
Hey, what?
He started to turn. He was almost all the way around when...
Oh, oh. Oh, oh.
The house was dark when I got back. Susie asleep. That was good. I'd had enough for a day, more than enough. I went to my room and hit the head. I didn't bother on Jesse. I wanted darkness fast. Darkness and quiet and sleep. And though I didn't expect it to come, it came. Sleep. Dreaming, sure, but I had to go outside. When I got close to where I put him, there was no more sound. The earth over him hadn't even been touched. He was still under it, deep under it, where I'd put him after I finished with the oar. Even if he'd still been able to hoot like an owl, you couldn't hurt him, not with all that earth on top of him. I'm sure I'd been dreaming. Back to the house. That's where the hoot owl was yelling from, except that when I got back, the house was the same. My room was the same. Till I put the lights on. I nearly let go of that. I nearly turned and ran because sitting in the chair next to my bed was Mr. Davis. Mr. Clark Davis. Dead and in person. The water was dripping from his clothes onto the floor, but there was no blood, nothing more. He was cold when I touched him because I had to touch him. I didn't want to. I wanted to run, to get away, to keep running forever. But I went to him, and I touched him. And his body was cold and wet and solid. My hand didn't go through him. That was all I needed. I headed downstairs. Susie had a car, a convertible, back of the house. I was there, all right. I reached in, felt the seats. One of them was wet. I went to the front of the car and touched the hood. It was warm. All the answers except one, and that one I'd get in person. I turned back to the house. I wasn't thinking anymore, just doing what had to be done. But I should have thought because... Both shots had got me. She ain't good. Low. Not trying for anything fancy like the head. Both shots were in me. Deep. I hit the ground and stayed put. Played dead. It was easy, a rehearsal. I could taste my own blood in my mouth. Soon it wouldn't be a rehearsal, but a real thing. But before that, she stopped. She was smart. Stopped a few feet away from me and waited. I didn't breathe. She wouldn't want to waste bullets, risk more noise. After a while, she came a little closer. She'd seen the blood I was sliding in. She came a little closer. And I still had strength enough to roll and
get her ankles and bring her down.
Let me go.
I got a wrist. She still was watching through the gun too far for me to get at her. But I held on to her.
Clark! Darling, what's the matter with
it's
you?
It's no use. You dragged your brother out of the lake, didn't you? You hooted like an owl. You saw me kill a hotel clerk, didn't you?
It makes you feel any better, I did. You better let go of me. You're not doing yourself any good bleeding the way you are.
Why shoot me? Why didn't you yell at the cops? You had the goods on me. All you had to do was show them your brother's body. Why drag it into my room? Why try to drive me nuts?
Because, you idiot. That body in your room isn't my brother.
Isn't your brother? Who is he?
A friend of mine. A boyfriend.
What about your brother?
You ought to save your breath. A dying man like you.
What about your brother?
Yes. He was murdered.
Why?
The man you thought was my brother.
Why?
Because my uncle left all the money to my brother. He didn't trust me, didn't like me. So I had my brother killed. The man you met on the train was going to impersonate my brother till the will went through. You had to come along.
Yeah, I had to come along.
When you walked in, I didn't know what to do. I tested you. There is no Mrs. Brenner, but you fell for it. So I knew you didn't come from Clarkstown.
Why'd you shoot me? We could have gone through the act.
Not after you killed the hotel clerk. He'll be missed. I couldn't afford to have an unsolved murder around. They'd find out about my real brother. This way, you're a killer. My brother's dead because of you. I'll get the money.
She'd stopped trying to get away. She was waiting for me to die. And I was dying, all right. But I was still strong enough.
My throat! Don't get your hands off! No!
Still... strong enough to take with me.
That, I think, pretty much winds up the sad story of Danny. A winsome lad who only wanted a new address and discovered that the housing situation is... murder. We can sympathize with his feeling about rent ceilings, but he really shouldn't have raised the roof. Of course, it's no fun to be out in the cold, But did Danny have to go to the other extreme? The person that we really don't understand, though, is Susie. She didn't have to kill Danny. After all, he only wanted to be a brother to her.
Sanctum was heard in the United States over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System, and has been rebroadcast for servicemen and women overseas. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 29th of August, 1949 on CBS. You are listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lefonier. If you were a listener to Chicago radio in the middle 1940s, on the day of April 22nd, 1945 to be exact, and were tuning around the dial, you could have heard the Great Composers program, the Army Hour, the Ethel Barrymore Show, or the Sealed Book at 2:30 in the afternoon. Let's hear the broadcast from that exact time now, called Death at Stormhouse.
The Sealed Book. Once again, the keeper of the book has opened the ponderous door to the secret vault, wherein is kept the great sealed book, in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. Here are tales of every kind, tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds strange and terrible beyond all belief. Keeper of the book, I would know what tale we tell this time. Open the great book and let us read. Slowly, the great book opens. One by one, the keeper of the book turns the pages and stops. Ah, the strange story of a beautiful woman whose jealousy was so great that even the grave could not give her peace. A tale called Death at Stormhouse. Here is the tale, Death at Stormhouse, as it is written in the pages of the sealed book. It takes place in the old New England mansion known as Stormhouse, perched high on the cliffs above the crashing waves of the Atlantic Ocean. In her bedroom, Lizette Lester, young and beautiful mistress of Stormhouse, lies desperately ill, listening to the storm that is raging outside as her husband and Dr. Warren, their lifelong friend, hover over her.
John. John.
Yes, Lizette.
John, open the window. I want to hear the storm. I want to hear the thunder crash and the wind scream.
I'll open it, John. You stay with Lizette.
Thank you, Howard.
Oh, it's a wonderful storm. I've known it was coming for 3 days. I've always known when a storm was coming, haven't I, John?
Yes. Yes, Lizette. You've always known.
And I've been waiting for this one. I've been waiting for it so I could die as I was born. On a night when there's a storm filling the sky and death riding the wind to take me as it took my mother that night.
Lizette, don't say that.
You mustn't excite yourself, Lizette. It weakens you.
I'm dying, Doctor. You know it as well as I do. It's only the storm that's keeping me alive now.
Oh, Lizette. Lizette.
John, darling.
Yes, Lizette.
In my will, there's a bequest to old Andrew for his faithful service. Everything else is left to you, including the house. On condition that you live here at least 6 months out of every year for the rest of your life.
Lizette, I can't bear to talk about it.
But we must, darling. You don't mind the condition that you live here half of every year, do you?
Of course not, my dearest.
I couldn't bear to think of you as ever very far from me, in life or in death.
I'll always be with you, my darling.
And you won't marry again, will you, John?
Never, Lizette. I swear it.
You've sworn it, John. You mustn't break your vow. If you do, I'll be angry. Very angry. And when I'm angry, I do terrible things. You know that.
I know, darling. You have my promise. I'll never break it.
Oh, it's such a beautiful night. All my life, I've never been able to sleep on a night like this. I wonder if now when the storm sweeps in from the sea, I'll know it and wake up. Oh.
Lizette. Lizette. John. She's gone.
Done, Mr. John. I couldn't want better if it was myself buried down there in the ground.
Thank you, Andrew.
I'll put the tools away now. Call me if you want me.
I can't believe it's Lizette we've buried here, Howard. Somehow she seems still alive. She loved living so.
It's a beautiful spot here on the edge of the cliff.
She made me promise she should be buried here, where she could watch the storms come in from the sea. Hear the waves beating on the rocks below.
John, do you mind if I speak personally to you?
Why should I? You're my best friend. My only one, in fact.
That's one of the things I wanted to talk about. In the 3 years since you married, you haven't painted a single picture.
No. No, I haven't. I've started some, but there was always something Lizette wanted to do.
For 3 years, you've been cooped up here, seeing no one. You might as well have been in prison. You should get away for a while now. Why don't you spend the winter in New York? Renew old friendship. Catch up on what's happening in painting.
Yes, I'd like that.
And there's another thing.
Yes, Howard?
The promise you made to Lizette.
Promise? Oh, you mean not to marry again?
Yes. You mustn't take it too seriously. You're too young to spend your life alone, grieving. Lizette wouldn't have made you promise if she had thought...
I don't know. It seemed to mean so much to her. Well, when Lizette was alive, it seemed quite impossible to me I should ever love another woman.
But you will, and I'm sure Lizette would understand.
I'll think about it, Howard. The truth is, just now, I feel a little confused.
Well, let time take care of the matter. But you will close up Storm House and try a few months in the city?
Yes, I will. I'll come back in the spring. After all, I'm obligated to live here half the year. But I'll leave old Andrew in charge and spend the winter in New York.
Once away from the somber atmosphere of Storm House, John Lester seemed to waken as if from a dream. He began to paint again, to live as he had before his marriage to Lizette. Then at a party he met Nora Maynard, young, gay, lovely. And one day in the spring, he brought her back to Storm House as his bride. He introduced her to old Andrew, the caretaker, showed her through the house, then took her out to see the magnificent view from the top of the cliffs.
Oh, John, it's a wonderful old place. The house, the cliffs, the sea. I'm going to love every minute here.
I was afraid it might seem rather wild and gloomy to you, Nora.
Oh, no. Look, the clouds, the waves tossing as far as you can see. The ocean way down below us. It's magnificent.
Yeah, it can be frightening, too, when a real storm comes sweeping in from the sea.
John, what's that over there on that little point?
It's Storm House's private burying ground. That grave you see is Lizette's.
Lizette? Will you tell me more about her sometime, John?
Yes, of course. Well, now we'd better go in. It's almost dark. All of a sudden, the wind seems to be rising.
Oh, just one minute more.
I want to tell Andrew to phone the village for groceries before the stores close.
Well, you run in and tell him. I'll come in right away. Well,
then don't be long. The wind's getting cold.
Poor Lizette. I wonder what she was like. I wonder if she used to stand here and watch the darkness sweep over the sea and... John? Is that you? John, it's so dark I can't see you. John, don't... I'll pull up!
Nora, what is it?
Oh.
Did you call me, Nora?
Oh, John, you frightened me. I thought you really were trying to push me over.
Push you over?
I know you were just joking, but I almost lost my balance. I almost went over the cliff.
Nora, I didn't push you. I was halfway up the path when you called.
You were halfway up the path?
I wouldn't play a joke like that. You must have become dizzy.
I suppose so. But I was sure I felt your hand push me. And then the wind seemed to force me toward the edge.
It must have been the height. Made you lose your balance.
Yes, of course. That was it.
Darling, come inside now. You promise me you won't ever go close to the edge of the cliff again.
Yes, let's go inside. And I promise, John, the cliff frightens me now.
During those first weeks after John Lester returned to Storm House with his new bride, the wind never ceased to howl about the great old house. Several times when Nora was walking near the cliffs, strong gusts sprang up that would have pushed her over to her death if she had been walking closer to the edge. Then one afternoon, Nora discovered old Andrew piling flat, large rocks on top of Lizette's grave.
Andrew, what in the world are you doing? What are those rocks on Lizette's grave for?
It's the wind, Miss Nora. Blowing night and day like it has, it's been blowing the dirt right from off Miss Lizette's grave.
How strange.
Yes, sirree. Give it a couple more weeks and it scooped up all the earth and had the coffin clear uncovered. But the rocks will stop that. Yeah, I guess that's enough.
Andrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Did Lizette love John so very much?
Love Mr. Lester? Why, yes, I expect she did, ma'am, in her way.
In her way?
Excuse me, Miss Nora, I got to drive to town now for a package for Mr. Lester.
Oh, his new paints from New York. He's been so impatient for them. Oh, Andrew.
Yes, ma'am?
That big stone vase on the upper terrace, right beside the steps. It's loose on its base. I saw it swaying yesterday as if it were going to fall over into the garden. Please fix it, will you?
Yeah, as soon as I get back from town, ma'am.
Thank you, Andrew. You know that Dr. Warren's staying for dinner.
Yes, Mr. Lester told me.
Oh, well, I promised to meet him in the garden at 4. Be sure to fix the vase, Andrew. Hello, Dr. Warren. Have I kept you waiting long?
Well, there you are, Nora. I was just beginning to be afraid you'd gone too close to the cliff and become dizzy again.
Oh, no. After almost falling over twice, I don't take any chances now.
That's the spirit. Where's John?
Painting on the upper terrace. There he is now.
Oh.
John!
Oh, hello, you two. What are you plotting down there?
A tour of the caves down by the beach. Knock off for the day and come along.
Please do, John.
Well, maybe I will. Light's fading.
John, don't lean on the stone vase. It's loose and... Oh!
Nora, look out!
Nora, you hurt? I'm coming down.
Good grief, that was close. Fell right where you were standing.
You pulled me back just in time.
Nora, are you all right?
Yes. Yes,
thanks to Dr. Warren. He saved me. I couldn't move.
I can't understand it. I'd hardly touched it when it went over.
You must have leaned against it harder than you realized.
No, I didn't. I just touched it. It gave way all of a sudden. Oh, thank heaven you were here, Howard.
It must have been the wind. And the vase was loose. I was just telling Andrew to fix it.
If you'd been hurt, Nora.
Oh, a miss is as good as a mile, darling. Come on. Let's forget the caves and go in and have tea instead. The wind has turned awfully cold all of a sudden.
Listen to that confounded wind. I can't even read anymore. It makes such a racket.
Would you like me to read to you, darling?
No, no. I'm just jumpy, I guess.
It isn't something special, is it? You're not regretting that you married me.
Oh, don't be silly, Nora. It's just the wind. For the last 2 months, it hasn't let up night or day. Listen to it now.
Oh, it is upsetting, darling. Sometimes it sounds just like a voice saying something you can almost make out, but not quite.
I haven't painted a stroke in 2 months. Every day I get my canvas and my paints ready, and then the wind rises and distracts me.
You're not sleeping well, are you, John?
No, I haven't slept for weeks. Nor I can't stand it any longer. I can't stand it. If that wind doesn't stop blowing, I think I'll go mad.
Oh, my darling. John, listen to me. Listen to me, dear. We must go away from Storm House, away from the wind. We must, John.
I... But the will...
The will doesn't matter. Oh, John, please say yes. We can't ever be happy here. There's something about the place that will forever prevent us.
Leave Storm House. Never come back.
And never come back.
Yes. Yes, Nora, you're right. We'll do it. We'll leave tomorrow.
Oh, John! Oh, we're going to have another storm.
Yes. Certainly has come up quickly. Sunset, there wasn't a sign of a storm.
It's as if Storm House knows we're leaving and wants to live up to its reputation on our last night. Well, darling, I think I'll go to bed and dream about leaving here tomorrow. Coming?
No, I'll finish my pipe and tell Andrew our parents.
All right, darling. I'll bring my diary up to date while I wait. Don't be long now.
Mr. John.
What is it, Andrew?
Land sakes, Mr. John. A real granddaddy of a lightning bolt hit the cliff just now, right beside the burying ground. It opened up a big crack in the earth, running right across her grave.
Her grave? Lizette's?
I could look right down and see the top of the coffin.
Oh, well, you can fix it in the morning. We're going to be leaving, Andrew, but we'll settle the details tomorrow. Better turn in now. I'll do the same.
All right, Mr. John. Sure is a humdinger of a storm.
And tomorrow we leave here forever. I do so hope it's going to make a difference. John has seemed so depressed lately. I wonder if it's my fault. If he regrets marrying me. No, I won't think that. Not even this storm can frighten me now. I know John loves me and... Who turned out the light? Who came in then? John, is that you? John, where are you? Don't tease me like this. You're frightening me. John!
After the great storm had opened up Lizette's grave so that her coffin was plainly visible, Nora had a midnight visitor. There was a scream and a body crumpled to the floor. The next morning, the sheriff came to talk to John.
That's all of it, Sheriff. That's all I know. Nora screamed. When I got to her, she was lying there on the floor. Dead. Murdered.
But the weapon, Mr. Lester. We know it was that antique ivory paper knife of yours, because the point broke off in the wound. But where is it?
I don't know. I tell you, I didn't see it.
I see. Well, I think you better come with me for the time being, Mr. Lester.
Hey,
prisoner, Doctor. You can see him for 15 minutes.
Oh, Howard, thank heaven you've come.
John, how are you? Oh,
how am I? I don't know. I don't care. Howard, have they caught Nora's murderer?
They still think you did it.
I gather that they did. And the ivory knife hasn't been found?
Nowhere. And we've searched every inch. John, think. I know when you found Nora, you were shocked and dazed. But the knife, surely you saw it. Surely you drew it from the wound, put it down somewhere. You must have.
I've tried to think, Howard. I'm sure I'm right. There was no knife. Only Nora, crumpled beside her writing desk. The blood staining her nightdress. The wind screaming outside as if in triumph.
I understand. I know you didn't murder Nora. I don't know how we're going to convince the world.
Is it as bad as that?
As bad as that. If only the knife had been found, it could have been suicide then. But the knife is gone, and you testify that Andrew is innocent. So, as there wasn't any other living soul but yourself in the house that night...
I see. Well, I've told them all I can. I don't know how the knife could have disappeared. There's nothing more I can do. Even though they hang me.
And hang John Lester they did, after a due and lawful trial. For in the jury's eyes, the fact of the missing ivory knife that had killed Nora Lester was damning evidence. After the execution, John's old friend, Dr. Warren, conveyed the body homeward to Stormhouse, where he and faithful old John buried it in the tiny burying ground. Andrew dug the grave close between the graves of Nora and Lizette. So close, in fact, that while digging, his pick struck a coffin.
Doctor, look!
Corner of a coffin. Lizette's coffin, it must be.
Yes. That night the lightning struck the cliff. Must have moved her coffin round somehow. I remember the grave looked a little queer next morning when I fixed things up.
I guess we'll have to dig it up so we can put it back in its proper place.
Yeah, guess we better, Doctor. Well, won't take long. Doctor. Guess that does it all right.
Good. Now we'll just slide the coffin back into its place. You've made plenty of room.
Dr. Warren.
What is it, Andrew?
The lid of this coffin's been tampered with.
Tampered with? But that's impossible.
Come take a look, Doctor. You'll see I'm right.
I guess I'd better. Stand aside, Andrew.
Yes.
Now, just what do you mean?
Look, Doctor. All along both sides and this end.
The screws. They're all loose.
Yes.
They've been pulled out of the wood when someone lifted the lid. This coffin's been forced open.
That's right, Doctor. Only, look, how was it forced open? There's no tool marks on the wood.
No tool marks. Then whoever did this just didn't leave any. Andrew, we've got to look inside and see why Lizette's coffin was molested.
Maybe we'd better leave it just as it is, Doctor.
We can't do that. Here, put your pick under the edge and the lid. That's it. Now, lift.
Well, if you say so.
Easy, does it? There. It's loose. Now, we'll see what...
I told you we shouldn't open it.
A bloody knife. The ivory knife that killed Nora. Here, in Lizette's coffin.
They hung Mr. John because they couldn't find the knife. And it's been here all along, held tight in Lizette's hand.
So it was beautiful Lizette who killed Nora. Lizette, whose jealousy was so great that it reached back from behind the veil of death. And it was Lizette who took the knife of murder back into her grave with her, so that John, too, would suffer her vengeance. Or was it? Was there some other answer? You must decide that for yourself, for the sealed book does not say. You have heard the story in all its strangeness,
just as it is written here. And now, keeper of the book, before you close the great book, show us the tale we tell next time. This one? Ah, yes. Why, this is amazing. It's a tale of a man who killed, a corpse that laughed, and a murder victim who died twice. A tale called The Accusing Corpse. Be sure to be with us again next time when the sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting tale from The Sealed Book. The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
The Sealed Book, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 22nd, 1945 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Wrapping up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.